It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
News Radio Studios in New York City. Fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Hello, everybody. I'm Mary Welter, sitting in for a vacationing Brian Kilmeade. Pretty sure Brian's going to be back with you tomorrow. A lot to get to today. Coming up later this hour, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will be joining us. We have a lot to talk to him about. We're going to talk to him about a whole bunch of stuff going on politically, the border. So a lot to cover with him. I want to start out, though, covering what's happening north of the border as opposed to south of the border. And let's talk about this Freedom Convoy, shall we? If you would like to join in, feel free, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. So in Canada, you know, they have really draconian lockdowns with COVID and everything. And the mayor of Ottawa declared a state of emergency on Sunday because they have about 500 trucks and vehicles that are part of that Freedom Convoy we all saw, we all know about, that's hanging out in the streets of Ottawa. All right. And it's the Canadian capital. And for those of who knew, right? Like, how many of us just learned that Ottawa was the capital of Canada? Anyway, they're protesting these vaccine mandates and other coronavirus related restrictions. And the truckers, this whole idea with truckers being mandated to get this vaccine, it kind of cracks me up because they sit in their truck by themselves. Maybe a dog is with them, right? They may have a dog, they may have a cat, or their husband or wife is with them. They may have like a traveling buddy, but that's it. They're enclosed in a box. How much more socially distant do you want someone to be than a trucker? But yet they have to get this vaccine. And then there's also issues with crossing from Canada into the U.S. and U.S. into Canada. And so it's disrupting the supply chain. Whereas if you've tried to get, you know, some electronics, anything, food even, crossing the border, building supplies with timber and things like that, go back. We do a ton of business across the border into Canada. If you ever ride Amtrak, in the northeastern part of the United States, I sometimes would take, back in the day, I took Amtrak from New York City up to Ticonderoga on the Montrealer, goes all the way to Montreal. And you would see the northern half, Canada actually controls the traffic on Amtrak in northern New York State. And we had to pull over at one point. I forgot where we pulled over, but we had to pull over. And we had to sit, maybe it was like Albany, and we had to sit on the side because trains taking lumber and goods to Canada, freight trains, had right away over passenger trains because of the trade going back and forth. So there's a lot of trucks that go back and forth as well. But all of that's being disrupted over these vaccine mandates. So the trucker said, well, if you're not going to let us do our job, we're going to show you what it's like if we can't do our job. And they just blocked everything up. And you're seeing this happen all over the world now. You're seeing copycat protests all over the world. They're Australia, in the Netherlands, it's happening. So you're seeing, and there's talk of one in America coming up. I can't imagine how Washington D.C. is going to respond if they try to head to Washington and you know, sit in the streets there. And I would assume that there will be shenanigans from the left if that should happen. So I'm kind of hoping it doesn't. So the police announced yesterday that they have arrested 7 people and more than 100 have been issued tickets in connection to, quote, demonstration-related enforcement in Ottawa. Now, so what they're doing is that they're prosecuting anyone found bringing fuel to the trucks in the red zone. So they're arresting and charging those people because they need fuel in order to stay warm at night, stay warm in their trucks. Because it's cold in Canada in February. It's cold. So to run their trucks in order to keep warm, they need the fuel. So people have been bringing them fuel and supplies and food and everything else. But if you bring them fuel, you are now subject to arrest and charges. Multiple vehicles and fuel have been seized. 5 of the 7 arrests were for unspecified mischief. A 6th person was charged for driving while prohibited. A 7th for mischief relating to property damage of a downtown business. It's so Canadian to call it mischief, isn't it? Like, right? Like, it, to me, they seem like the most proper people. You know, they're just really nice. And so for them to call it mischief to damage a business, I just think that's just so Canadian to me. More than 100 Highway Traffic Act and other provincial offense notices were issued for offenses including excessive honking, so Canadian, driving the wrong way, a defective muffler, no seatbelt, alcohol readily available, and having the improper class of driving license. So far, 60 criminal investigations related to the demonstration have been opened, primarily for mischief, thefts, hate crimes, and property damage. And there was a park, Confederation Park, where people were hanging out, and they had set up tables and things like that to help the truckers. That has all been cleared and now fenced off. The police chief declared it a siege on Saturday. We do not have sufficient resources to adequately and effectively address this situation. Now, here's the dichotomy to me. If this were in the United States and it was Black Lives Matter laying siege to, I don't know, part of Seattle, part of Portland, part of Washington, D.C., when they were camped out in Lafayette Park, all over the country, you had Antifa, Black Lives Matter, they often travel together, occupying various parts of cities. We never called that a siege. By the way, I would think that if you take over a part of a city and you don't allow the cops in, remember in Seattle, the chop zone, people were getting raped and shot and they wouldn't let the ambulances in. They wouldn't let law enforcement in. How is that not an insurrection? I keep hearing insurrection all the time because of January 6th, insurrection. Yet we called Seattle part of the Summer of Love. And when I say we, I kind of mean like the mainstream media, not we. You know, it's like the royal we. So I just find the dichotomy so interesting. Let's go to Tucker's show last night. This is Cut 5, Eric. This is Ezra Levant was on with Tucker. And they were talking about why Trudeau is targeting the trucker protests in particular.
I think Justin Trudeau is more scared that he lets on because these are supposed to be his people. They're young, they're ethnically diverse, they're working class people, but they're not following the script that they normally do for him. There hasn't been a significant court ruling against the lockdowns, and Trudeau's sort of hoping that they'll be able to starve or freeze these truckers out. I don't think it's going to work, though. It's not just in Ottawa. There are trucker convoys in many other parts of the country, including hundreds that have blocked the Montana-Alberta border for over a week now. It's in the middle of the prairie, hundreds of huge trucks and agricultural equipment that can't be towed away. The Mounties tried to move that blockade. The burly truckers stood them down. So I think this problem's bigger than Trudeau knows how to solve unless he goes full Castro on them.
Very interesting. I did not know about the blockade on the Montana-Alberta border. That's not getting any play in the media. I heard nothing about that. Now, let's just go back about a week because Justin Trudeau has not been heard from. Have you noticed, I had a COVID exposure, so I have to quarantine and I'm going to leave Ottawa and go quarantine somewhere where no one knows where I am. Now, if you've had a COVID exposure, but you test negative, I think it's 5 days is the isolation period. I think that's it. It's been far longer than that. This is, let's go to cut 23 here. This is a little flashback for you where he talked about rallies, right? Because what did I just say? When it came to Black Lives Matter and it came to Antifa occupying all over this country, they apparently were doing the same thing in Canada. And here's Justin Trudeau talking about that.
I have attended protests and rallies in the past. when I agreed with the goals, when I supported the people expressing their concerns and their issues. Black Lives Matter is an excellent example of that.
Black Lives, he agrees with them and supports their issues. That's why that's allowed to happen. The same thing happened in this country, in these cities where Democrats run the show, right? They allowed the taking over of parks and streets that people lived on and trashing of and burning of businesses. You have the Justice Department in all of these cities now dropping the charges against all these people. You know, if you were at the Capitol on January 6th, even if you walked in through an open door, we're arresting grandmas and raiding their homes and making them plead guilty to things and you know, renounce their support of Trump in front of a judge. And we're ruining their lives because they entered into the Capitol through an open door and they wind up pleading to a misdemeanor. But Portland, you shine a laser into cops' eyes and you walk. That's what's happening in Canada. 866-408-7669 if you want to join us. Coming up, let's talk about what's happening with the funding of this, where people are donating to this. Elon Musk donated to this as well, but he gave to GoFundMe, which we now know. They don't agree with this either, so they're not going to do business with that. And some Republicans are speaking out. We'll have that coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We won't give in to those who fly racist flags. We won't cave to those who engage in vandalism or dishonor the memory of our veterans.
That was Justin Trudeau the last time we heard from him, which was over a week ago. And he has nothing more to say since on this freedom convoy that is happening all over Canada. And Alaska, there was a freedom convoy held in support of the Canadian truckers. The freedom convoy happened on Sunday. It was organized by an assembly member in Canada. Now, more than 100 drivers and trucks and personal vehicles traveled from a sporting goods store in Anchorage to the Eagle River Alaska Lions Club. And there was a second convoy that also has some events scheduled. And there was another rally that happened in Juneau on January 29th. So this is starting to spread, but you're seeing it more, as I said, in Alaska. I would be surprised. Well, maybe I wouldn't be surprised if they started here in the lower 48. But as you start to see mask mandates drop, especially for kids in school, you're starting to see that happen in New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware. Recently, those were just announced. And it's isn't it funny, in New Jersey, they're not dropping it till the beginning of March because apparently COVID still hangs and needs time to pack up its bags. So the month of February, you still have to remain masked in school just in case COVID is hanging around. There's any laggards, you know, we can get rid of them so that by March, COVID is gone. That's so dumb. Why not just make it now? Why are we waiting till March? I don't understand that. So as I said, GoFundMe. And we all know, removed the Canadian Trucker fundraiser. And initially they said, you can request your money back and you have to jump through these hoops and you have to do it by February 15th. And what you don't get, we're donating to charity. And there was such an outcry about that, that they decided that they're just going to automatically refund the money. So now you can give through Give, Send, Go, which is more than happy to host the fundraiser for the truckers. So there's also been some blowback about all of this because they allowed fundraising for Black Lives Matter. They allowed fundraising for some of the occupied zones. That was okay because, like Trudeau, they agreed with the goals and supported the issues. So that's okay to them. Senator Marsha Blackburn was on Fox Report on Sunday. And she talked about the hypocrisy and what's going on with GoFundMe.
It's so interesting to me that they have done this. And you know, John, if you use their actions and say that is their logic, and they're saying, well, you can't have this on our site because it causes disruption. Well, then you would think they would be pulling down every BLM organization or affiliated organization, but that is not what is happening. And we know that GoFundMe corporately gave to BLM when those protests were taking place, and the violence was carried out in cities. It caused deaths. It caused, I think, about $500 million worth of destruction in these cities. So they are very subjective. And I will say this, it is why we need some non-discrimination language that will be in the governance and the legislation we're going to pass dealing with these big tech companies.
And I have mixed emotions about that, because I believe if you're a baker and you don't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding or whatever it happens to be, you shouldn't be forced to do it, because really, it's not a hardship. You can walk down the street and go get a cake made from another baker. It's simple. I don't know of any towns in which you can't travel to another bakery and get the cake made that you want. But you can't go. There are very few options to go with social media, because these giants, they're huge behemoths. There aren't a lot of other options. And when other options come up, like Parler, they get together to take that one down. So they don't. There's no competition. They're monopolies. Sounds familiar. And it's the government's job to break up monopolies. So I think there's a difference between a bakery in a small town and GoFundMe, which is this huge giant. And I never like GoFundMe anyway, because they take a portion of the money. I think it's 5% of the money. And it depends on what it's for. And sometimes they don't take any. But I'd rather just, you know, if it's a friend or something like that, I'm like, I'll write you a check, dude. I'd rather you get the whole thing than give a part of it to them. Here's a little bit more of Marsha Blackburn talking on Sunday on Fox Report about GoFundMe.
They are very subjective in what they monitor, what they censor, how they carry this out. And the actions they've taken against the Freedom Convoy are very discriminatory. They disagree with them, so therefore they were going to cut them off, which they did, and then they were going to take all that $9 million and use it for charities or groups or something, people that were on their GoFundMe site. Now, fortunately, they're giving that money back, and the money is going to the Freedom Convoy through other avenues. This is why we have to go in and we have to deal with these big tech companies, these social media platforms, and the way they are conducting themselves in the virtual space.
Now, along those lines, four Republican attorneys generals have pledged to investigate the GoFundMe decision to take down the fundraiser for the truckers. You have Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody, the Louisiana AG, Jeff Landry, Texas AG Ken Paxton, and the West Virginia AG Patrick Morrissey. Now, this started, Morrissey was the first one to kick this off, and it started before they announced that they were going to come up with a way. Originally, they announced they're going to take the money and let the truckers decide the charity to which they were going to donate it. And then there was a blowback about that. And then, you know, eventually we got to the point where they're just going to automatically refund it. So he started that. But I think there does need to be an investigation into this. All right, coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will be joining us. And boy, do we have a lot to talk to him about. You don't want to miss it on Fox News Radio.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade today. Coming up, we'll be speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. I want to start off talking with you, though, about immigration. And Representative Lauren Boebert, Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, she's from Colorado. She has introduced a bill called the No Taxpayer-Funded Lawyers for Illegal Aliens Act. And there are other House conservatives and some other immigration organizations, immigration reduction organizations, that are supporting this. She said no organization or city that receives federal funds should be spending it on legal aid for people who cross the southern border illegally. And I can tell you there are some states that do this. My lovely state of New Jersey, we pay for through tax because we have such low taxes in New Jersey. It's no big deal. we pay for legal counsel, free legal counsel for people who have entered into the country illegally and are living in New Jersey. Now, if you're a New Jersey citizen and you need representation, of course, you have to foot your own bill. That's just the way that rolls. She says, the principle's really simple. No more American tax dollars to help illegal aliens cut the line and skirt our laws. And she told this to Fox News Digital in an interview. She said, Democrats want to treat the border detention facilities like an Oprah Winfrey show. You get free education. You get a free plane ticket. You get free medical care. You get free, free, free. It really has to stop. And my bill is the first step in this process. Let's delve into this a little bit more with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Texas gubernatorial candidate, senior fellow at the Media Research Center, former congressman in Florida. And he is the author of the books Hold Texas, Hold the Nation, Victory or Death, and We Can Overcome, an American Black Conservative Manifesto. You can follow him on Twitter at Alan West. Sir, thank you for joining me. I love when I get to speak with you.
Mary, it's such a good honor to be with you. I'm sorry I'm a little late. I just finished speaking at a breakfast here in Dallas.
Well, I hope it was a good breakfast. Did you get good food?
Yeah, I had my normal ham and cheese and spinach omelet. And we talked about the importance of Texas, and we talked about what's going on down at the border and how it's really affecting not just Texas, but the United States of America in so many ways.
It is so, what is happening down there is just crazy. And that's exactly what we're talking about now. And by the way, congratulations on getting a good meal at one of those fundraisers or any of those, like those meals, because it's usually, you know, horrible. It's horrible food, powdered eggs, you know, or rubber chicken. So congratulations on that. You hit the, don't buy a lottery ticket. You won already. Lauren Boebert, Congressman Boebert, has introduced this No Taxpayer-Funded Lawyers for Illegal Aliens Act. And what it would do is it would prevent an organization or a city that receives federal funds from spending it on legal aid for people who cross the border illegally. I would have thought that this is illegal already, because are you not aiding and abetting a crime with that money?
No, you're absolutely right. You're aiding and abetting human and sex trafficking. But it's not just the legal aspect or the lawyers, but we also have to look at these 501c3 not-for-profit organizations. Here in Texas, we got Catholic Charities, we got Lutheran Ministries, and a couple of others that they're down there being the travel agencies for illegal immigrants. The Border Patrol, they're not processing. The ICE is not deporting. These individuals are being turned over to these 501c3s who are getting federal taxpayer grant money based upon how many illegals they process into the United States of America. And it's very simple. Here in the state of Texas, we should revoke their licenses to operate in the state of Texas, as they are 501c3 not-for-profit organizations. So I would just hope that so many people will rise up and say, we're not donating any more money to Catholic Charities or Lutheran Ministries because of what they're doing down here, taking federal grant money to really aid and abet the human and sex trafficking, especially human trafficking coming out of Texas all across America.
And I think that that is an important thing right there, because Catholic Charities has always done so well with Charity Navigator. It's always been one of the top ones because they have low overhead. Most of the people who work for Catholic Charities or deal with them are volunteers, or they're the religious part of the Catholic Church. So they're getting paid already. They're not taking money for doing it. So a lot of the money actually goes for whatever it is you're donating, whatever their mission happens to be. So they've always gotten a very good rating from Charity Navigator. I will not give them my money anymore. I'm done. I will give my money to individual groups, maybe on a smaller scale, to directly where I know the money is directly going to the charity and not to people who are running it. So I think Republicans need to get these groups' names out there and pound it over and over and over again so that people know, because I know people who donate to Catholic Charities, and when I tell them, they're shocked. They have no idea. They're like, but Charity Navigator gives them such a good rating. I'm like, yes, but look what they're using it for, you know? So that needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the fact that they, again, are getting, you know, taxpayer-funded money, grants based upon how many illegals that they are processing. You know, you just saw a bunch of single military-age males, and Bill Malugin of Fox News is doing an incredible job down here in Texas. And he showed these individuals in Brownsville, Texas, going to an undisclosed office location. Well, guess what? That's one of those either Catholic charities, Lutheran ministries, a 501c3 not-for-profit that are giving them taxpayer money, $1,300, $1,400 per illegal immigrant, a free cell phone, and then they get the opportunity to get on airplanes. And, Mary, how big of a slap in the face it is to Americans that people are actually using their arrest warrant as a means of identification to get on airplanes and travel in the United States of America.
I don't understand how any of this is legal. I listen to this and I'm like, I don't understand how this is legal. We're kicking toddlers off planes because they won't put a mask on because they're toddlers. But yet we allow these people to get on with their kids and everything else. We have no idea what diseases they're carrying onto these planes because there's no COVID check. There's nothing. And you, like you said, an arrest warrant, which doesn't an arrest warrant mean that there's a warrant out for your arrest and you shouldn't be allowed to travel? You're a wanted person. Isn't that what that means?
That's what it means to an American citizen. But obviously, we have created a dual, path whereby if you're an illegal, you get more rights than an American citizen does, because an American citizen is unconstitutionally being told that they must get a jab in the arm. Look at what just happened, I believe, up in Boston, Massachusetts, where the man was denied a heart surgery operation because he hadn't gotten a shot. But yet, who is denying any entry into the United States of America, especially across the border here in Texas, for these illegals that don't have a shot? So this has to end, and the American people have to start standing up. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running for governor, is because folks are tired of it here in Texas, and they want to see their border secured.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming up in the next segment, something else I want to talk to you about. So I want to get to try to wrap up immigration during this segment. But Lance Gooden out of Texas.
Congressman.
Yes, he is. I mean, he just like the rest of Texas being overrun with illegals. And he believes that impeachment of Biden over this border, what's been happening at the border, should be on the table for Republicans in 2023, assuming that they take back control of the House, you know, the House and the Senate. They have control over everything, that they would be able to get that through. What do you think about the idea of impeachment based on what's happening at the border?
Absolutely right, because Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution is called the Guarantee Clause. Two things that the federal government is supposed to guarantee to every state in the union. Number one, a Republican form of government. Number two, protect every state in the union from invasion. Joe Biden is unconstitutionally violating his oath to the Constitution, the rule of law. He's not owning up to it. That's an impeachable offense. That's high crimes and misdemeanors. And furthermore, if I continue to hear him say that no amendment to the Constitution is absolute, he doesn't believe in the Constitution, he should not be in the office of the presidency.
I've been saying this for a while now, that because all of this to me appears to be illegal, I'm not a lawyer, but if you're using money to aid and abet a crime, that's in and of itself a crime. And Joe Biden and Mayorkas and the rest of the crowd, they're all doing that. Kamala Harris, you know, endorsing paying, you know, the bail of people in Portland and everything else. I mean, it's just lawlessness. And also using our taxpayer dollars, allowing them to, you brought up the warrant, being able to travel with a warrant. Are you not aiding in the escape of a criminal, right? I if an American gets on a plane and they're using a warrant to get on the plane, and you allow that to happen, they're fleeing prosecution or fleeing from where they're supposed to be. Is that not a crime?
That is a crime. And again, you are aiding and abetting human and sex trafficking. You're aiding and abetting a terrorist organization. That's what the cartels are. And it just comes back again to the Constitution. You have a duty to protect the sovereignty of the state of Texas and the United States of America. You're not doing it. That's a high crime and misdemeanor. That's probably treason. And you should not be sitting in the office of the president.
Yeah, okay, so here's my last question on this. Will the Republicans stick together to do this? I don't see Mitch McConnell going for impeachment of Joe Biden. I just don't see it happening. He's a creature of the swamp.
And that will be their downfall if they don't understand that they've got to go in and they've got to fight hard. And if they get the majority back, people are not looking for the same old status quo. The Republicans up there on Capitol Hill need to come out with a contract for America, or with America, much the same as Newt Gingrich did back in 1994.
Amen. Yes, I would love to see this. I've been banging this drum for a while now, saying this is illegal. This is a crime. Why are they not? I would love to see the Republicans do it now, even though it's not going to go anywhere. I know it's not going to go anywhere because Democrats are in power. But they would do it if this was the other way around. If they weren't in power and this was Trump, they would still go through the impeachment circus just to shine a light on it. They're much smarter than the Republicans when it comes to things like that.
Well, they have a delusional tenacity.
But it works. I got to tell you, it works. It gets their message out.
It does.
There's a lot to be said for it. Coming up, I want to talk to you about Jimmy Raskin's wife. And being up for Sarah Bloom Raskin for supervisor, the vice chair of Federal Reserve, and what happened.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And he has nothing more to say since on this freedom convoy being that is this happening all over Canada and Alaska. There was a freedom convoy held in support of the Canadian truckers. The freedom convoy happened on Sunday. It was organized by an assembly member in Canada. Now, more than 100 drivers and trucks and personal vehicles traveled from a sporting goods store in Anchorage to the Eagle River Alaska Lions Club. And there was a second convoy that also has some events scheduled. And there was another rally that happened in Juneau on January 29th. So this is starting to spread, but you're seeing it more, as I said, in Alaska. I would be surprised. Well, maybe I wouldn't be surprised if they started here in the lower 48. But as you start to see mask mandates drop, especially for kids in school, you're starting to see that happen in New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware. Recently, those were just announced. And isn't it funny, in New Jersey, they're not dropping it till the beginning of March because apparently COVID still hangs. It needs time to pack up its bags. So the month of February, you still have to remain masked in school. Just in case COVID is hanging around, there's any laggards, you know, we can get rid of them so that by March, COVID is gone. That's so dumb. Why not just make it now? Why are we waiting till March? I don't understand that. So as I said, GoFundMe, and we all know, removed the Canadian Trucker fundraiser. And initially you can request your money back and you have to jump through these hoops and you have to do it by February 15th. And what you don't get, we're donating to charity. And there was such an outcry about that.
Interesting to me that they have done this. And you know, John, if you use their actions and say that is their logic, and they're saying, well, you can't have this on our site because it causes disruption. Well, then you would think they would be pulling down every BLM organization or affiliated organization, but that is not what is happening. And we know that GoFundMe corporately gave to BLM when those protests were taking place, and the violence was carried out in cities. It caused deaths. It caused, I think, about $500 million worth of destruction in these cities. So they are very subjective. And I will say this, it is why we need some non-discrimination language that will be in the governance and the legislation we're going to pass dealing with these big tech companies.
And I have mixed emotions about that, because I believe if you're a baker and you don't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding or whatever it happens to be, you shouldn't be forced to do it, because really, it's not a hardship. You can walk down the street and go get a cake made from another baker. It's simple. I don't know of any towns in which you can't travel to another bakery and get the cake made that you want. But you can't go. There are very few options to go with social media, because these giants, they're huge behemoths. There aren't a lot of other options. And when other options come up, like Parler, they get together to take that one down. So they don't. There's no competition. They're monopolies. Sounds familiar. And it's the government's job to break up monopolies. But so I think there's a difference between a bakery in a small town and GoFundMe, which is this huge giant. And I never like GoFundMe anyway, because they take a portion of the money. I think it's 5% of the money. It depends on what it's for, and sometimes they don't take any. But I'd rather just, you know, if it's a friend or something like that, I'm like, I'll write you a check, dude. I'd rather you get the whole thing than give a part of it to them. Here's a little bit more of Marsha Blackburn talking on Sunday on Fox Report about GoFundMe.
They are very subjective in what they monitor, what they censor, how they carry this out. And the actions they've taken against the Freedom Convoy are very discriminatory. They disagree with them, so therefore they were going to cut them off, which they did, and then they were going to take all that $9 million and use it for charities or groups or something, people that were on their GoFundMe site. Now, fortunately, they're giving that money back, and the money is going to the Freedom Convoy through other avenues. This is why we have to go in and we have to deal with these big tech companies, these social media platforms, and the way they are conducting themselves in the virtual space.
Now, along those lines, four Republican attorneys generals have pledged to investigate the GoFundMe decision to take down the fundraiser for the truckers. You have Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody, the Louisiana AG, Jeff Landry, Texas AG Ken Paxton, and the West Virginia AG Patrick Morrissey. Now, this started, Morrissey was the first one to kick this off, and it started before they announced that they were going to come up with a way. Originally, they announced they're going to take the money and let the truckers decide the charity to which they were going to donate it. And then there was a blowback about that. And then, you know, eventually we got to the point where they're just going to automatically refund it. So he started that. But I think there does need to be an investigation into this. All right, coming up, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will be joining us. And boy, do we have a lot to talk to him about. You don't want to miss it on Fox News Radio.
From the Fox News Radio studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Welter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Let's start off, shall we, with General Jack Keane, chairman of the Institute for the Study of War and Fox News senior strategic analyst, also one of my personal favorites. General, thank you for joining me.
Oh, great to be here with you, Mary, and hear your voice again. Wonderful. And also with Brian's audience here. Great.
Well, thank you. Let's talk about what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. We keep hearing that, you know, it's imminent. And now Naval News is reporting that the first part of a Russian Navy amphibious landing ship force, which can carry troops, tanks, and supplies, has entered the Dardanelles, connecting the Mediterranean to the Black Sea. And there's no return because this is so narrow that ships cannot turn around and go back. So once they go through, they're there. Is this just more of a show of force by Putin? Or does this mean that this is really going to happen? He's really going to invade Ukraine?
Well, I don't think we know for sure. I mean, obviously, he's made all the preparations to do that, and he's bringing in, you know, his naval infantry. I do think a couple of things. One, we're still in a genuine diplomatic phase, and that is being led by President Macron as part of the Normandy format, which was established post-2014 to deal with the conflict that was taking place in eastern Ukraine between the Russian separatists and the Ukrainian military. And out of that came the Minsk-1 agreement and then a Minsk-2, which was never really implemented. And I believe that is what Macron is trying to do with Putin, is to get him to make some concessions. He's on his way to see Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, today, and get him to make some concessions. And possibly, if we can come out with some tentative Minsk-2 agreement, that would be face-saving for Putin, and he'd be able to you know, declare a victory of sorts, I think, and send his troops home. I mean, that's very optimistic thinking, but that certainly is a possibility. So we do hold out some hope for a diplomatic solution. Also, I think Putin would favor a solution like that, because one of the things he's doing is to separate the United States from Europe, and he's had some success at that. You see it with Germany. But Macron himself, who this year is the president of the EU, he just served, I think, for a year or two, he has for some time believed that Europe should look for its own security solutions, not unduly influenced by the United States.
Right.
And so this initiative that he's taken on is kind of in that line of thought. And I think Putin actually welcomes that because it diminishes the impact of the United States. I'm not saying he's going to make a deal. That remains to be seen. But there certainly is a possibility of that. I also don't think, Mary, that it's likely that he would do a full-out invasion where he would take over the country, because it really isn't in his pattern since he's taken power. I mean, he did go into Georgia in 2008 after President Bush invited Georgia and Ukraine to join NATO, and others did also in Europe. But his troops stopped short of the capital. He pulled back and held on to a piece of territory quite removed from the capital and much smaller, because he believed he accomplished the mission. And he's not seeking ownership of the country. He's really seeking influence over it. He doesn't want to have to deal with all the problems that go on if you take over a country. So in 2014, when he annexed Crimea and started his operation in eastern Ukraine, an anti-Russian government was in power then, because they ran out his stooge, Yanukovych, and he did not take the country down. He could have if he wanted to.
Right.
And I think for very much the same reason. He doesn't want it to join NATO, and he wants it not to look to the west, but to look to the east towards Russia. The second thing that tells me he's not doing a full-out invasion is not just because it's not in his pattern, but he hasn't prepared his population for those kind of increased casualties. He's still telling his population that he doesn't intend to go conduct an invasion, much like he's telling the international community, but he would do so, you know, to stabilize an unstable situation. And the other thing is that the forces that everybody's watching that are coming into Belarus, they are a hodgepodge of forces from the east and other parts of Russia. They are not a coherent invasion force. He has a coherent invasion force down in the south and east under the command of the 8th Combined Arms Army, but that is not in the right position to take over the whole country. I'm not suggesting the forces in Belarus wouldn't cross the border and conduct some limited operation. They certainly could,
right,
other than seize the capital. But what is most likely, if he's going to conduct a military invasion, is an invasion into eastern Ukraine, where he already is, and take more territory there, use that naval infantry to take the coastline, as you mentioned in your introduction as well, and conduct probably a fairly comprehensive cyber attack on the government and its services, its electric grid. Certainly, he's already reducing the energy flow into Ukraine. He'd probably cut it down and just try to shut the lights off if he could, and hit them financially to seek some political accommodations from the Ukraine government. I mean, he would love the government to go out of power, but I don't see how he could do that without physically taking control of the capital.
So I have a lot of questions, and we have like 2 minutes left. This all goes back, best I can tell, back to the 90s when Bill Clinton expanded NATO, and Russia did not want that expanded because they wanted some kind of buffer between them and Europe. They felt that by expanding NATO, they were being encroached upon and it was too close for comfort for them. So this goes back to that. And you can see this is, I think, Putin pushing back against that expansion of NATO. So you mentioned that he was talking with Macron to get some kind of a deal. What would he want in a deal that would make him feel comfortable if it is about the encroachment of NATO?
Some legitimacy over the territory in eastern Ukraine, where the separatists are fighting, which is recognized by the government of Ukraine, and they could participate in the political process given that legitimacy. I think that is something that he would want, and certainly that is something that Zelensky and his predecessors have been denying them. And I think de facto he's really accomplished something that he wanted to from the outset. Even though there's no declaration by NATO members that Ukraine will never become a part of Ukraine, it's well understood now that in the foreseeable future, Ukraine will not become a part of NATO.
So Ukraine is not a part of NATO. Why are we involved in this? I get the attack on one is an attack on all. We hear that all the time, but they're not a part of NATO. So why is the U.S. sending troops?
Well, first of all, we're not sending troops into Ukraine to fight.
Right.
We're sending troops to our NATO allies to reassure them because they are nervous, particularly Poland and the Baltic states, which Belarus borders on, given the fact there's 30,000 more troops in there, and some of them are right up against the Polish border, not even looking in the direction of Ukraine. So that's about reassuring our allies. It would not deter Putin one iota from what he's going to do inside Ukraine. I do think Ukraine is in our national interest, though. I mean, this is a European country. It's a fledgling democracy. It has relationships with the West. It wants economic integration, certainly with the West. It's trying to improve its corruption and its state of its government to model itself on the West. We do have relationships with it. And what we have said is while we won't send U.S. troops in to defend Ukraine, we'll provide as much assistance as we can. I think we could have provided actually more than what we are doing to help them defend themselves. And I think letting Russia take over a fledgling democratic country that has relationships throughout Europe would be absolutely unacceptable in terms of our own national interests and the Europeans' national interests. And that's another reason why I think the all-out invasion is also not on the table, because Putin would become an international pariah as a result of just right now being a strong bully to take over a country, much like took place prior to World War II, which precipitated World War II. We haven't seen anything quite like that since then. Would really put Russia in a different category than they are now.
Yeah, they gave me a couple more minutes, so I have a couple more questions for you if I can get them in here. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline we keep hearing about, and this is why Germany sent Ukraine like 5,000 used Talmuds. They're really kind of, I think, riding the fence here. They're not really fully committing. We saw that with after the meeting with President Biden and the Chancellor of Germany, Scholz. You wrote a piece for Fox News, and you also talked about this, that the Nord Stream 2 isn't a big deal in this whole crisis, at least not for Putin. So it's a bigger deal for Germany, and Putin knows that. Why isn't it a big deal for him?
Well, I think it is in the long term of things. I mean, certainly he wants the access to that pipeline for many years to come. It financially and economically, it means a lot to him. But geopolitically, it gives him leverage over not just Germany, but Europe as well, because he can weaponize it, as we've seen. But it just dealing with this crisis and putting blinders on it, Nord Stream 2, yes or no, would not deter Putin one way or the other, because he doesn't have any income from it now. He's getting it from all the other pipelines that lead into Europe. Mm-hmm. It's something that would be out there in the future. And I think we're making too much of it in the United States. Listen, Biden certainly never should have removed the waivers the sanctions that were on Nord Stream 2 that Trump had imposed on them, that's for sure. I do believe that Germany, you know, they want economic ties with Russia, and they're willing to put their own security and that of Europe a bit at risk to achieve it. Kind of like what we've done with China economically, you know, we helped reform it, thinking political reform would follow. It didn't. But I think behind closed doors, the chancellor has told Biden, you know, that he would not activate it if Russia invades. He's not saying that directly to his own people and to the international community. I think he's wrong in not making that declaration, but that's the weakness of where Germany is today. But I do think we do make too much out of it, because we're not cutting down any resources that he has right now. And it, in and of itself, I don't think it has much of any deterrence on it. Now, economically, going after Russia's major central banks and going after Putin and the oligarchs that surround him and shutting down all investment going into Russia and import tech and export technology coming out of the United States, that is very significant impact on him.
Yeah, well, we know that Joe Biden doesn't have a stellar record as far as any kind of leadership on an international front, and they view him as weak. And Putin is like a shark. He sees chum in the water. He sees a weak enemy, and he's going to go after him, which is why I think all of this is happening now. But I'm glad we had the chance to speak with you about this, because you're saying, I don't think there's going to be a full-out invasion, which is, I think that's really important to hear, because that's what the Ukrainians are saying. Like, we're okay, you know, don't stop making such a big deal out of this. We're trying to live our lives as usual. We live with this threat all the time. We can handle it. And the U.S. and Europe is screaming about, you know, imminent invasion. So it's good to know that. So I'm really glad that we got to speak with you today to hear that. General Jack Keane, thank you again. It's always a pleasure when I get to speak with you, and you have a great week.
Yeah, a limited invasion, not an all-out invasion. Is
right.
Likely. Yeah.
But something that they can handle, a limited invasion. They seem feel that they can handle that, which I guess we'll find out if they can.
So. Okay, great talking to Mary.
You too. Thank you so much. If you want to join in, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669. Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. We were just joined by General Jack Keane, and we were talking about Ukraine and Russia and what's happening there and what Putin really wants out of this. And this whole Nord Stream 2 pipeline, I think the general made a really good point when he said that, you know, Putin's not getting any money for this right now. And he's got enough money flowing in from oil deals with countries all over the world. It's really more of a deal, an issue for Germany. And he seems to think that behind the scenes, the German chancellor is saying that and said that to Joe Biden yesterday. We don't know, because publicly he didn't say anything. So there's a buildup. We now know that there are ships that are capable of land invasion, you know, making landings on shores. And they're coming through on their way through the Bosporus, on their way to Ukraine. And how big of a deal is that? And he seems to think that maybe there may be some incursion into Ukraine, but it's not going to be a full-blown attack where we're going to see them go to the capital and take over Ukraine. And the general made a good point. He said, there's a lot of problems that come with taking over a country that doesn't want to be taken over, and Putin may not want to deal with that. And I think those are all excellent points that I know I hadn't thought of. 866-408-7669. Let's head to Los Angeles and talk to Barry. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hello. So, you know, this started last week when they're announcing that, you know, Kiev would crash in less than 3 days or whatever.
Yes.
This is all playing Biden's... saying this because it only helps him. It's a no-lose situation for him. He screwed up Afghanistan so bad, he needs something. So if Russia does invade, he's like, oh, well, we told you it was going to happen. If Russia doesn't invade, he's like, oh, well, we stopped him. It's obvious what Biden's doing. I mean, I, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Russia's not going to invade, but it's that, you know, Biden's just using all this to his political advantage right now.
So, okay, all right. Now, I had not thought of this, so I'm glad you bring this up, because I had not thought of this point. So what you're saying is to detract from Afghanistan, which, by the way, I have to tell you, I think most people forgot about, because the media swept it under the rug dutifully for Joe Biden, that this gives them something else to talk about. And look at how great Joe Biden is handling this. He's being forceful. He's sending troops to, you know, to Poland. And just in case, he's showing Putin a big show of force here to make him look good. Which is something, Barry, thank you for that. I hadn't thought of that. But I also, like I said, I kind of think most people have forgotten about Afghanistan, sadly, because the media swept it under the rug. They're not blaring it from, you know, the rafters. So I think that that's part of what's going on there. Right. More of your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. I'm just going to quickly go to one call here on Ukraine, and then we're moving on to the economy. So, Doug, listening on KLIN in Lincoln, Nebraska, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi, Mary. My question is how much do you think this is tied to Hunter? Because he might still have interest in the petroleum companies that are stationed in the Ukraine.
You know, I wish I had more time with General Jack Keane, because I wanted to ask him about that, because you think the same way I do. Ever since I've been hearing this, I'm like, oh, come on. Joe Biden's ties through Hunter to the Ukraine. We all saw when he challenged them to fire the investigator that was investigating the company that his son was sitting on the board of Burisma, and said, we're going to, you know, basically blackmailed them. If you don't do this, we're withholding your money, a quid pro quo, or as Sean Hannity calls it, quid pro Joe. Why is no one asking that question?
Yeah, and that's where I think it's probably what part of a lot of this is about.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Doug. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's something to think about when you hear all of this. And I don't know if we'll ever find out, because I don't know if Republicans are gutsy enough or will ever investigate any of this stuff. Hunter's laptop, all that. You see the New York Times going after them and looking, doing a discovery on Hunter's laptop. But I don't know if that goes anywhere. I just don't. And I have my doubts. Let's talk about the economy. And I went out to dinner on Saturday night with my brother and his girlfriend and my husband's cousin and his wife. And they both know. Each one of those other couples knows someone who recently bought a car and paid above the sticker price. And the dealerships are asking above sticker, like, yeah, the sticker says this, but we're getting $5,000 above the sticker price. Like, horrible time to buy a car. And I was shocked. I'm like, what do you mean they paid above the sticker price? Who pays above the sticker price? Well, apparently, if you need or want a new car right now, you're going to be paying above the sticker price, because there aren't a lot of cars out there to be had. You may not get the color you want. You may not get all the options you want. You may not be able to get the actual car that you want, the model that you want. And in line with that, you've got gas prices raising. It's incredible. My husband and I were out running errands on Friday. We drove past this one gas station, and my husband says, I swear, they change every time I go by this gas station, it's the price is higher and higher and higher. Sure enough, we go past, and it was $3.35 or whatever. And when we came home hours later, it was $3.45. It just keeps going up. And now there is a survey of over 2,000 adults, and it was conducted November 2021, but then they crunched this information, they compared it to other information that was done by other surveys, and they find that it's getting harder and harder for people to save money. Shocking. Isn't that weird? 7 in 10 Americans say they are now living paycheck to paycheck. 7 out of 10, 70% of Americans say that they are living paycheck to paycheck. 63% say that they don't see themselves reaching a level of financial security that will allow them to live the lifestyle they want. Now I heard that and I'm like, well, welcome to the swimming pool, kids. We all, when you're young, you're like, oh, my life's going to be this and I'm going to be doing this and I'm going to do that. And then reality sets in somewhere along the line, you know, like in your mid 40s, and you start to realize, wow, so this is as good as it's going to get. I'm kind of like at the peak of my career, maybe one or two more promotions, tops. After that, it's all downhill to retirement. Wow. And it's an eye-opening experience. So I'm curious to hear from you, 866-408-7669, how inflation is affecting you. You know, when you see it at the pump, when my husband, if he gets half a tank of gas, he's filling the car up because he knows if he waits till it's lower, it's going to be more expensive in a couple of days. So he'll fill up right away. Friends of ours just bought an electric vehicle. Now, I have to tell you, these electric vehicles you got to plug in, I don't know. Because you're paying for the electricity. And like my state, New Jersey, because Murphy is in charge, Lord help us, you know, he wants to get rid of natural gas in New Jersey. You know, no more houses, new houses being built, won't be able to have gas heating. They won't be able to have a natural gas used for cooking. Everything's got to be electric. Yet in the state of New Jersey, something like 80 to 90% of electricity is generated through nuclear power. And they don't like that either. So through natural gas. That's it. I knew that was wrong. Through natural gas. So you're still using natural gas. So it's ridiculous. So I want to talk to you about being able to save money. Let's hear it. Are you able to save money? I think a lot of people are in this predicament now because they're like, wow, we have to raise wages. Okay, you raise wages to $15 minimum or whatever your state raised it to, because that's going to help people make ends meet because a family of four can't live on minimum wage. There's a whole lot wrong with that thinking. But then the price of everything goes up, and guess what? Even though you're making $15 an hour now compared to whatever you were making before, you still can't afford anything because things are more expensive. So I want to hear about how inflation is affecting your family. Where are you seeing it? How much is it hurting you? And what you're doing. I mean, did you take another job? Apparently, there's a lot of jobs out there that nobody wants because we have an entire generation that just doesn't want to work now. I don't know how they're making ends meet. I don't know how that's happening for them. I mean, I'm considering getting another job. I'm like, I'll just go get another full-time job, you know, or part-time job, whatever, to make, you know, a little extra cash. 866-408-7669. 866-408-7669. Now, I said that we went out to dinner on Saturday, and that's another thing that got super expensive. Have you noticed? I bought a pizza. Listen to this. I bought a pizza last Wednesday. And this is this special pizza. We only get it a couple of times a year. It's made by this pizzeria that's here from Brooklyn. And it's a spinach artichoke cream pie. And it's to die for. The first time we had it, our friends brought it over. And it was one pie. They only make large for four people. I said, how's this going to work? It weighed like 5 pounds. It has a really high crust on the side, thin on the bottom, because it's like Alfred, it's a cheese cream and spinach and artichokes. So good. And it was $23. So I get it like a couple times a year when I go past the pizzeria. I'll order ahead and I'll get it. It's a treat. I bought it this time. It was $28. It went up $5. And it was the thinnest little thing you've ever seen. So they cut back on what they put in it and they raised the price by $5. So my husband's like, well, give it one more shot. If it's this way, we're never getting this again. So the pizza, a $28 pizza. That's insane. 866-408-7669. You have Ford cutting down production at 8 factories. They started doing this yesterday because of a shortage of computer chips. So there isn't as big of a demand for the product because there's no computer chips. So people who may have just, you know, gotten a new car, not because they needed it, but because they wanted it, they're not going to buy a new car now, right? My husband's like, yeah, I would like to replace this car, this one car we have. It's like, we bought it in 2013. So it's coming up on 10 years old. It's still chugging along. He said, yeah, I might want to replace it, but I'm not doing it now. I'm not paying above list. Let's head to Virginia. Ashby, you are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. So how is it affecting you?
Well, it's, you know, we're a plumbing contractor. We're busy as, you know, ever, but just, you know, kind of looking forward at it, looking at numbers from last year compared to this year, I mean, we're literally paying 3 to 4 times as much for basic materials, raw materials like pipe, fittings, things of that nature. So, you know, everybody's bids have had to go up, which seems to be sustainable at the moment. But, you know, looking forward, banks only loan so much money on a house. And so, like you were talking about, people paying above sticker price for vehicles. I mean, that's what they're doing now for homes.
Yes, yeah, they are. People, you're right.
You have people coming in with $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 contingency offers, paying well above market value to the point to where, what's your average American that that is not, doesn't have the ability to offer above market value that much? What are they going to do? You know, that's a slippery, scary slope.
I don't think it's sustainable for the long run. I may be wrong. I just don't see that sustainable in the long run. That can only go on for so long before it all comes crashing down. At least that's what I think. I could be wrong, but you can only have inflation in house prices before people just tap out. And then you're going to start to see homes not being sold. And that's when it all starts to, you know, even out again. Ashby, you're so right. And by the way, Ashby, thank you for joining me. But do you know that plumbers, at least in my area, make more per hour than doctors? Hand to gut, it depends on what kind of doctor, and they're not going to make more than a surgeon. But like your average run-of-the-mill specialist type doctor, you know, like an ear doctor, an eye doctor, you know, lung doctor, that type of thing, they make more per hour than they do, than those doctors do. It's crazy. It's really crazy. Let's quickly go to Jerry in Florida, listening on WSKY. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, good morning, ma'am. I just wanted to let you know, I own 6 bread delivery routes in North Central Florida, and due to the considerable increase of gas prices, it's costing me about $1,000 more per week to fill the tanks in my 6 trucks.
Whoa,
This has impacted me. This has impacted me because diesel now is over $4, which may not be a lot in other areas of the state, such as the Northeast or the West Coast, but it's up over $1.25, and, you know, these trucks, they have 30 to 40 gallon gas tanks, you know, fuel tanks. And so I'm working a part-time job just to kind of keep up on the treadmill of life, if you will. I mean, I personally believe that this is done intentionally because they see large V8 vehicles as contributing to climate change, and they really want to control. This is an attempt, in my opinion, to control what the consumers buy and try to shift us towards either mass transit, shift our behavior to mass transit, or electric vehicles.
Yeah, that's a great point. But again, the irony and the hypocrisy of all of that is that in many places, electricity is made, generated through gas, natural gas. And so you're kind of, I don't know, it just seems to be hypocritical when you say, oh, but electricity is clean energy. Well, it's no cleaner than natural gas. And in some places, it's generated with coal, which, by the way, has become very clean in this country. Jerry, good luck with that. I don't know how long you can keep that up. And maybe he's right. Maybe this is being done purposely to try to change American habits. But we were through this in the 70s, right? Wasn't it the 70s with Jimmy Carter and the gas lines and people lining up to buy gas? And it didn't change anything then either. So I don't think it changes it that much in this country. I could be wrong. 866-408-7669. I'll get more of your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
There's no topic he won't touch, and there's no opinion he won't engage.
It's one of the great joys of my life.
Call in with yours at 866-408-7669. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Mary Welter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade, and we're talking about how inflation is affecting you. And, you know, there's shortages, too. You got Ford curbing vehicle production because of chip shortages. You go to the grocery store now, there are empty shelves. It's just like, why can't I tried to get, I was trying to get cups or play, oh, hot drink cups, you know, like the cardboard, you know, the hard drink cups. And I couldn't get them. They were out. They were gone. The shelf was empty. I was like, what, there was a run on drinking cups for coffee? Disposable ones? Really? 866-408-7669. Let's head to Florida. Emily, You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. So how are you? How's it affecting you?
Okay, so I do hospice home health. I fill up 2 to 3 times a week. I've taken on a second job also to kind of, you know, cover other expenses. But there's been weeks where I don't even know if I'm going to have enough money to put gas in my car to get to work, to do my job. My company that I work for has given us a little bit more money per mile. We used to get 44 cents. We now get 50 cents. But with gas steadily going up,
right,
you know, it just doesn't help. And I drive a little tiny Kia. You know, 2 years ago, it was $25 to fill up. I'm looking at $48 now.
Wow.
3 times a week. Yes. So, and I also make a little tiny more than maybe, you know, whoever's making $15 an hour. You know, I make $15.90 an hour. So it makes it there's some days where you wonder if it's worth what you're doing. You know?
Right. And that sentence right there, it makes you wonder whether it's worth it. I almost think as if that's part of it, because the more people that sit home on unemployment or on, you know, with rent forgiveness and the government's helping you with all your problems and meeting all of your needs for you, people don't want to work. But then you're also dependent on the government. And to me, ultimately, that's the point. That's the ultimate in control, is if you're dependent on them. And I think that that's part of it. Emily, thank you for sharing your story, because I think that there are quite a few people who are in the same boat. But to the previous caller's comment about this, you know, trying to change our habits, trying to force us into, you know, buying electric vehicles and all that. When I was commuting to Washington, D.C., every week I drove 8 hours, 4 hours down on Friday, on Sunday, 4 hours back on Friday. I bought a hybrid. So it's gas and it generates electricity. I don't have to plug it in. And I will say, for driving around town, it's great. If you drive the car properly, you can get over 50 miles to a gallon. When I fill the car up, my tank will take me over 600 miles, but it's not a plug-in hybrid. And I would buy another one of those in a heartbeat. And I was thinking of Emily. I'm like, wow, that's perfect for her. She's in the perfect situation for that type of car. But you can't buy one now because there's a shortage of vehicles, because there's a shortage of chips. So now you're going to pay above the sticker price for a car. Let's head to New York and talk to Raphael in WABC. Raphael, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, how you doing? How's everything?
I'm doing good. How is it in New York?
It's a battle. Every single day it's a battle. You know, I wanted to comment on that last comment that you're talking about, how they're forcing us to change our habits, because I talk to people. I'm a small business contractor. We do interior construction and commercial spaces. And I talk to everybody every day. I'm like, why are they stretching out this thing for so long? And it's exactly what you said. It's about changing our habits. I'm thinking that they're guessing that the longer they keep us in this one stagnant position, you know, people would conform. But I tell people all the time, do not quit. Do not stop, because that's what they want. They want us to go from us being, you know, productive and manufacturing and commercial to this whole new green, you know, deal that they, you know, the green jobs. And I'm saying to myself, well, what's going to happen between now and the green jobs? In between, there's a transition state. What's going to happen? And I tell people all the time, we got to keep fighting. I know it's 3 more years of this idiotic system that's in place right now, but we got to keep fighting and we got to keep doing what we got to do. But, you know, that's what we're here. And
I agree with you, and I don't mean to cut you off, but we're up against the clock here, Raphael, so keep fighting. But here's the thing, people. If you're unhappy, maybe stop doing what you've been doing all along. Maybe think about a candidate that's not a member of your party, whether that's Democrat or Republican or whatever it happens to be. Maybe open your mind a little bit to voting for someone who is outside of your party if you're unhappy with the direction in which the country's going or your state or city is going. I'm Mary Walter. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Live from the Fox News radio studios in New York City, fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Yes, I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Let's talk about your personal finances, inflation, the economy, and how all of that is stacking up against you Or are you making it work? Have you taken a second job? Have you tried to buy a car lately? I had a revelation on Saturday night out with friends who know two people. One of them was her mom, and her mom insisted on buying a new car. And she's like, Mom, don't buy it. It's a bad time to buy a new car. Dealers are asking above sticker price, and her mom went up paying over $5,000 above sticker for the car. It's like land, or it's like buying a house. You're going to pay above. I go on Zillow and Redfin. I go on these different sites just to look in different areas, just to see what's happening. And I'll see something that didn't sell and it's still on the market, but they've increased the price. I'm like, so it didn't sell at a lower price, but you've just increased the price to like $25,000. And now you think it's going to sell. I'm like, well, I guess, you know, good for you. People getting crazy amounts of money. There's a house across the street from us, diagonally across the street. This house sold for $3 million. I think it was $3 million. And they're tearing it down and they're building another house on the property. So it's going to be like another $2 million. Where are these people getting this money? And if you going back to the cars, if you want to buy a car, Ford just announced that they started curbing vehicle production yesterday at 8 factories, Chicago, Michigan, Mexico, Kentucky, Illinois, Dearborn, Kansas, because they can't get enough chips to make enough cars. So that's going to drive and trucks. That is going to drive the demand up even further. 866-408-7669. Let's go to WABC out on Long Island. Bob, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi. Bob? Going once. No, Bob's not there. Okay, Bob, see, look at that. You missed your shot at fame and fortune. In Michigan, in Traverse City, Al, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hello.
Hi. Hey, you caught my attention. We talked about 28 bucks for a pizza. I work all around the world, and back in 2016, I was in some plants in Venezuela. I paid $28 for a pizza, but it was an 8-inch pizza.
Whoa, so it was like a little personal pizza.
Exactly. I paid $25 for a Big Mac, and the prices were still going up.
And this was in Venezuela?
Venezuela.
So
all the inflation we're seeing right now is a pure result of the socialist policies, which is exactly what they had down there. Unbelievable socialist policies. Talk about paying too much for overpaying on a sticker price for a car. In Venezuela, all of the dealer lots were empty. There's no cars in the showroom. You can expect to pay three times the sticker price for a car. You order whatever you want. You pay up front. You wait 6 to 10 months, and you get whatever shows up in the showroom, or you wait for the next car. These are the kinds of conditions that are out there in socialist environments.
So if the conspiracy part of me was working this morning and I just happened to get my tinfoil hat out of the closet and I polish it up and I put it on, I say, wow, so, you know, they're telling us that, you know, they're trying to gaslight us by telling us that inflation is good because it means that people are out spending and people want products. And so this is good because it's opportunity and demand and telling us that not being able to find things on the grocery store shelves are good. Could this just be trying to slow walk us or trying to slowly raise the gas up on the pot of water that we're sitting in right now to get us to accept these types of policies, to get us to accept shortages and things that we've never seen before in this country?
Very much so. That's exactly what, because I spoke with a lot of people down there when I was in Venezuela, and they said the same thing. Taxation and policies are tools of social engineering. Inflation is simply the result. Your previous caller said they're increasing inflation to try to change your behavior. No, they're increasing taxes and they're changing policies to change your behavior. And the result of that is everything costs more. So inflation is simply the result.
Well, we've gone through inflation before and we didn't, you know, wind up, but I guess it was a step closer to socialism that the inflation, you know, like during Jimmy Carter, brought us to a step closer to socialism. You know, it's amazing. And thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that, Al. Because again, if my conspiracy hat was on, I would think that. But it's so interesting because the people who voted for Joe Biden are so quiet about all of this because they didn't like Trump. I know a lot of people who were just never Trumpers didn't like him. So they either didn't vote or voted for Joe Biden. And they're very quiet about what's going on right now. And I find that very interesting. Part of what is happening right now is increased in crime. You know, just our cities are not safe. you take your life in your hands. People, a guy in Philadelphia just went to go take care of his mom, drop some food off for his mom, gets in his car, and he's just shot dead in the street, and they take his car. They just shoot him. They don't even just take the car, shoot him, kill him, and off they go. It's happening everywhere. And you got to get to the, you know, we talk about the root causes with Kamala Harris going to the border. That always comes to mind for me. But I think for a lot of this, you have to look at the root cause. And someone who is doing that is Pastor Corey Brooks. He's the CEO with Project Hood, and he's the senior pastor at New Beginnings Church in Chicago. Pastor, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on today.
Now, this is your 80th day of 100 on the roof. Is today 80 or 81?
No, today is day 81, and day 80. I'm getting confused, but today is day 80, so I got 20 more days to go.
Now, of course, people are familiar with what you're doing because you have garnered a lot of publicity, which is fantastic and was the point of all this. And you can also, if you don't know, you can follow him on foxnews.com under his Rooftop Revelations. And so many of those revelations are just, I think, such great reading, especially for young people, and parents should really print them out or send their kids to that, to the foxnews.com webpage to read it. But you're trying to draw attention to the crime in Chicago. And by doing that, you're looking at the kids because these are the ones who wind up committing the crimes. A lot of them start out very young committing some of these crimes. We see teenagers, young teens, 13, 14 years old, getting popped for committing some very, very heinous crimes. So I guess my first question is, what type of reception are you getting from the neighborhood by drawing attention to this?
Well, the neighbors are appreciative. You know, everyone in our neighborhood understands that we have a serious gang problem and that we have a serious problem of crime. And so anything that we can do in this neighborhood with the residents as it relates to bringing awareness to the crime and alleviating it, getting rid of it, they're very appreciative. However, you know, the gangs I've had to talk with and conference with and have meetings with because they need a little bit more understanding. But when they understand that I'm not after them, I'm not trying to put them in jail, but I'm trying to redirect their lives and give them something to transform their lives, then they understand how important it is. So it's about creating options, alternatives, and opportunities for people that normally would not have them.
So now part of me almost thinks that the federal government and state and local government is working against everything you're trying to do, because I look at the number of gangs and criminals that are allowed to come across the border. We didn't know MS-13 in this country before Barack Obama opened up the borders. You've got kids being trafficked across borders. You've got sex predators being trafficked across the borders, and they settle into these cities in the poorer neighborhoods and victimize those people. You've got Joe Biden now allocating money to legalize drug use by the federal government, condoning this by giving this money to these nonprofits who then are now allowing clean crack pipes and needles and a safe place to do it and giving them food and everything else. We're normalizing crime. Those centers aren't located in Nancy Pelosi's neighborhood. They're not located in Lori Lightfoot's neighborhood. They're located in your neighborhood. So are people making a connection to how they're being, I think, they're being used as pawns to further this crime agenda, disorder in the streets, in order to take control?
Yeah, the statement I'm getting ready to make it now. I am a conservative. I am a Republican. So when I make this statement, I want that to be understood. But this just didn't start. We've been having issues with our community and government for a long, long time, from the 60s and their policies and that they failed with and put them in place. We've been failing from Ronald Reagan introducing drugs, from Iran-Contra. That's been an issue as well. And so now here we are, years removed, and now we have these Democratic liberal policies that are doing just the same thing that has been done for years to our community. All these policies have failed us, ruined our educational system, and a lot of other things. But we can't allow ourselves to be victims. We have to say, listen, we can change this. We can do something about it. But I want everybody to understand that government has not been fair to our community, nor to a lot of people in America. That's the reason why I don't trust government at all.
And I agree with you. I think that some of the policies that are being put in place by right now, as you said, now it's the left that's doing it, are just downright racist. You know, saying that, you know, African Americans aren't smart enough to be able to get an ID, you know, to vote.
Yeah.
So therefore, we have to change the rules for them. I'm like, really? That's pretty racist.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree that I agree wholeheartedly with that. That some of the policies, that some of the policies that we're experiencing right now, some of the policies that we're agreeing right now, that we're seeing right now, are very, in the ideology of it, it's kind of racist. The fact that people believe that we don't have the capacity or the wherewithal to be able to do for ourselves, and that we need them to somehow give us help and lower the standard and lower the expectations. That is just as racist as if someone had put on a hood.
So now let's talk about your program. So what is it that you are trying to get across? Like, you're raising funds for this. You're up on the roof for 100 days in order to bring attention to this problem, which I think is great. Are you looking for a cultural change in the African-American community in the inner cities?
Oh, without a doubt. It's all about bringing about transformation and bringing change. We cannot continue to allow the educational system that we have, where we only have 4% of kids reading at proficiency, 6% at math proficiency. We cannot continue to have 80% of our households, single-parent households without fathers. There are a lot of issues that we need to address, and we need to stop sweeping under the carpet as a community. And we need to address them. We need to do something about them. So that's the reason why we started Project Hood, so that we can address these very issues that we're faced with in our community, so that we can do something about the transformation of lives. And because it is a cultural change, it's a cultural shift that needs to happen. It's a paradigm shift that needs to happen, not just in Chicago, but we're seeing these issues arise all across America in these urban centers. And it's very unfortunate, because I think that people are forgetting that this is America, and these urban centers are just as American as anywhere else. And mm-hmm. because it's America, we need to do something about it. We need to make our country better. And one of the ways we make it better is making it better in the inner city.
Now, how do you plan on doing that? What is your goal once you're done with this? You brought attention to us. You've raised funds. What's the next step?
Well, that's a great question. The next step is to build this center where we can continue to 10X our programs, where we're teaching construction and the trades, where we're teaching hospitality and culinary arts, where we're providing trauma counseling for those who have been victims of violence, where we're doing media and technology, where we're offering STEM classes and coding, a lot of different things to transform the community. But we believe that once we've done this, that we can scale this same type of program and take it to inner cities where they're having these same issues, and begin to help them to turn around also. Like when you're talking about Philadelphia and St. Louis and Memphis and L.A., places where they're having problems, we believe that we can help change that, but we got to do it here first.
Yeah, well, we got to talk with King Randall in Georgia, who is 20-some-odd years old, started this program, much like what you're talking about, for young boys to learn that they have a sense of purpose, that there's something that they can do. And I think that that's very important. But I guess my question is, you know, we've seen these centers crop up throughout, you know, generation after generation in neighborhoods. Why is the time now? What is different now?
The time is now because people are becoming more aware of the fallacy of a lot of the policies that have been in play, and how they're not working, and how 50 years of failed policy has put us in a predicament to where we are now. And people are realizing that. People are waking up to that. And they want to do something about it. And so we believe that we provide opportunities for people who are really conscious, who really want to do something about it, unlike some organizations like Black Lives Matter, who they talk about all of these issues and problems, but they never do any of the grassroots work. Matter of fact, when it comes to even being transparent with their finances, we don't even know where those finances are, but yet they're using the pain of a community
right.
to take in millions of dollars and not do anything. So we believe in putting in the work. We believe in doing it, and that's yeah. what it's all about.
Very, very quickly, just like a 10-second response, have any politicians yes. been to visit you?
We've had all the candidates for the Republican governor to come and visit, and we appreciate that. And we're going to continue to invite everyone to the rooftop. So I'm very appreciative. And people can find out more about what we do on projecthood.org.
I was just going to give that out. Projecthood.org, H-O-O-D, all one word. And also you can read his rooftop revelations at foxnews.com. Yeah. Pastor Corey Brooks, got to run. Thank you so much. And keep up the good work.
It.
Have a great week. God bless. Your calls, 866-408-7669. Coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mary Walter sitting in for Brian Kilmeade, 866-408-7669. We're wrapping up some calls here about the economy and talking about how inflation is affecting you for everything. If you want to rent an apartment, rents are going sky high. Homes selling above asking price, cars selling above list price. You can't get certain things in stores. I have never seen in my lifetime seen empty shelves the way you're seeing empty shelves. And, you know, I remember people saying, Biden is going to make us Venezuela. Biden's going to make us Venezuela. And all the people on the left and all the never Trumpers are like, oh, stop it. You're crazy. And they poo-pooed everything. You go to the stores now in some places, and depending on what the product is, the shelves are empty. It's gone. A friend of mine posted a picture of where the poultry was supposed to be in his grocery store. There was nothing there. And my Biden supporting friends or anti-Trump friends are been very quiet lately. So how is it affecting you? 866-408-7669. Ray in Daytona, Florida, listening on WDBO. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Mary. Great show today. I'm a senior citizen and a former South Jersey boy. My wife and I moved out of Jersey in 71, so we've been in Florida a long time. But I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about inflation and also about cars. So,
well, you don't have a lot of time. We got to make it quick because we have literally a minute.
Oh, okay. Okay, inflation as a senior citizen, you just ain't going to make it on Medicare and everything being raised. But when 68, I was a credit manager in a department store in Hamilton, New Jersey, in Melville, and I was making $125 a week. And my wife and I, we got married 53 years ago. We could afford a house, a phone, food, and a car that was 2 years old. Today, you can't do it. A friend of mine had a Tesla, 4 years old, had to get it replaced, the battery, and it was $17 installation in the battery. I mean, this has just gotten so ridiculous. And then I watched the PBS show the other night where this couple rented a van and went from Munich, Germany, down into Italy and back. And because of the electric stations, they couldn't always hook up and the charges. And when they went in the mountains, you didn't get 200, 300 miles per mile. So somebody needs to check all this stuff out. So yeah. I'm just trying to warn you.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't mean to be rude, but we got to run. And one of the reasons money doesn't go as far as taxes. A greater portion of your income goes to taxes now. Coming up, masking, to mask or not to mask. And is your life getting back to normal as far as all those COVID restrictions? That's coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Our advice to every school district is to abide by public health guidelines. It continues to be at this point that the CDC is advising that masks can delay, reduce transmission. There are also a number of other mitigation measures that we've put in place, but that continues to be CDC guidance. It's always been up to school districts. That's always been our point of view and always been our policy from here. And our policy from the federal government is to continue to advise everybody to abide by public health guidelines.
It was Jen Psaki yesterday. Yeah, the White House still insists it's still Biden's recommendation for students to wear masks. So we have to follow the science. Yet I continually hear, well, the science has changed. The science has changed. The science has changed. I'm pretty sure that the science hasn't changed. I think that's a bad way to say it. Like, we've been following the science all along when they really clearly haven't been following the science all along. We still give no credence whatsoever to acquired immunity, to people who had COVID. I think it was Johns Hopkins just came out with a study. I think it was the second one I've seen. There was one that was done overseas where they've been tracking people who had COVID, and they've been tracking them to see the antibodies in their blood system. 20 months later, these people still have more antibodies in their blood than you do from getting the vaccine. And I'm a big fan of you do you. I don't care if you're a believer in the vaccine, go for it. That's fine with me. You want to get boosted? Get boosted if it makes you feel better, if that's what you believe. I believe that we should get the information without a political spin from either side, and we get to make that decision with our doctors. Imagine that. Shock and horror. I'm such a radical. But we should be seeing these things. So I don't think that the science changes. I just think that some of the science was ignored for political reasons. That's just me. That's my cynicism. So we are now seeing, though, that this is all slowly being rolled back. The big one came yesterday, with the governor of New Jersey, Governor Phil Murphy, the man who campaigned on making New Jersey the California of the East and was somehow reelected. This is cut two. This is Phil Murphy with a big announcement.
Because of the dramatic decline in our COVID numbers, effective Monday, March 7th, the statewide school mask mandate will be lifted. Additionally, we will lift the statewide mandate in all childcare settings. Later this week, we will extend the public health emergency by 30 days to allow for this mask mandate to continue until then and then be responsibly lifted.
So I'm not quite sure why you need another 30 days of an emergency mandate, because he wants the power and doesn't want to give it up. I don't know. Maybe because at the end of February, he has given every healthcare worker in the state only until the end of February to get a booster. Even if they've had COVID, he still wants them to get boosted. Even though they worked through the pandemic with no vaccine in the beginning when it was really bad. And you didn't see like them being felled in large numbers by this highly communicable disease. You didn't see that happening. But he is forcing them to get a booster by the end of the month. So maybe that's why this doesn't start until Monday, March 7th. And he keeps his emergency powers through then in order to force healthcare workers to get a booster that a lot of them don't want and a lot of them don't need because they had COVID. But we're following the science, and therefore we're totally ignoring natural immunity by having had COVID. 866-408-7669, asking if your life is back to normal. Are you back to normal? You know, because since all the COVID restrictions and all that kind of stuff, I'd like to know. I'd also like to go to cut 25 here. This is Governor Murphy on CNN. And this was a big deal because New Jersey is basically a socialist state. So for him to announce that he was lifting the mask mandates, it was a big deal. Connecticut and Delaware also lifted their mask mandates. I don't know if COVID hangs in their states until the beginning of March like it does in New Jersey. Not sure. And March 7th specifically, March 1st, COVID's still in New Jersey, but March 7th, it's not. Here's Phil Murphy talking about, you know, hey, the mask mandates worked.
There's no question that masking in our schools since the beginning of the school year has been a very smart public health step. I think we've had just over 2,600 cases of students with COVID positive since the beginning of the school year. That's out of 1.4 million kids. So it's a pretty stark piece of evidence, I think, that this has absolutely worked.
Yeah. But yet we find out that even people who are masked for however reasons are still getting COVID. And you see study after study after study coming out right now. Now we know cloth masks. Yeah, those didn't work. Sorry. And I see people wearing these masks and it's below their nose. It's got a big, you know, gap. Those little surgical masks, they've got these big gaps on the sides and on the top. Really? Does it stop some transmission? I'm sure it does. But I don't think it works to the degree that they are claiming. We'll go into more of this a little bit more, but I want to get to you and kick this off. Let's go to Nick in Jacksonville, listening on WOKV. Nick, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
I'm doing good. So are you back to normal?
Honest to God, we never got out of normal. I've been self-employed for the last 45 years. We're 70s. We're in our 70s and we're retired now. But when this all came upon us, my wife and I looked at each other, and we've been doing this all our lives. We're not going to get involved. We're not going to get punched around by this stuff. She's a very inventive cook, and she can make a full meal out of two or three different ingredients. We've been, like I said, self-employed all our lives. Our house is paid. Our trucks are paid. For a 20-year-old vehicle, I've got a 16-year-old vehicle. They run very well. We take care of them. We take care of our house. Mm-hmm. No bills, just what we have coming in, you know, the electric phone, this and that, and this and that. And I'm not bragging, but this is the thing that my wife and I decided to do when we first got married 36 years ago. It's us against the world, and that's in our philosophy.
Well, that's good. And also, Nick, and thank you very much for joining us and kicking it off. I think if you're retired, it either totally changed your life, COVID, or it didn't change it at all. I think it was one or another. You know, for my husband and myself, I wound up losing my job. I left because I was commuting to Washington, D.C. I was living in Washington, D.C. Monday through Friday and commuting back and forth. And then we worked from home for 14 months. And it was great. We did fantastically. Everything was fine. We had no problems. And then they decided, nope, we're calling everybody back. You have to be back in. You have to be in, five days a week, the whole bit. And so I had a choice between going back to a miserable lifestyle where I was constantly tired and commuting, four hours down, 4 hours back, and not seeing my husband, not living at home when I could do the job remotely. I said, well, I'm not doing that. It's kind of ridiculous. So I had a choice to make, and I made my choice. I made my decision. So it has altered our lives a lot in that respect. My husband, being a physician and running an ICU, I mean, he was in the thick of it in the beginning of COVID. So it has changed. And so we feel so much freer now because he gets more than one day a month off now, like one day off in March of 2020, like one or two in April of 2020. So for us, it's changed. So we do feel like things are back to normal. Being in New Jersey, you can eat in a restaurant without a vaccine passport and you don't have to wear masks because we've acknowledged that COVID can get you when you're standing up, not just when and as well as sitting down. You know what I mean? Because you could take your mask off as soon as you sit down. But if you stand up to go to the bathroom, you have to put a mask on. It was dumb. It's dumb. So some of those dumb hoops that they were making us jump through have been rescinded. And I think that that's a big deal. And I think we go even further and say, look at all of these things. We talked about Stacey Abrams, showing up maskless. And we now know that that visit to that school with Stacey Abrams was contingent upon everyone around her being masked. She wasn't going to go unless everyone around her wore a mask. And if you have, if you're mildly aware, there's a picture of Barack Obama in the Daily Mail with the workers at his building his home in Hawaii. They're all masked. He's not. You see AOC getting ready for whatever that awards banquet was where she wore the dress, taxed the rich. She's getting ready. And all the people around her, all the minions, the little people, the servants are all masked. She's not. How many pictures have we seen of elitists out to dinner or at gatherings or parties? Well, I think it was Barack Obama's birthday party where all the servers are all masked, but all the elites are unmasked. You see Stacey Abrams unmasked, but the children and the teachers are all masked. It's like when I see that, I'm like, this isn't dangerous. This is BS. At least that's what I think. Let's quickly go to cut three here. I want you to hear this. This is the media going after Stacey Abrams for that maskless photo.
If you're running this campaign and you're any staff member, if you're Stacey Abrams as well, and you're getting ready to do this, you know that this is going to be something the Republicans will seize on.
Stacey Abrams, to me, is one of the most intelligent people in politics.
Brilliant.
And she kind of slipped up here. They took a picture of her with these kids without a mask, giving aid and comfort to the other side. That's what she did. And I'm surprised at her, to tell you the truth.
Well, it was an unforced error. Yep. Like, why do that? Yep. Why give the right more ammunition? I mean, they always go after her anyway. And I think it was really hypocritical, actually.
One thing she did manage to do is unite Brian Kemp, the incumbent Republican governor, and David Perdue, the Trump-endorsed primary challenger. They both tweeted, essentially, saying that she was being a hypocrite. My paraphrasing of their tweets. But, the two, you're right. It was a gift to the two Republicans.
With the election coming up, this has to end, and they know it. 866-408-7669. Is your life getting back to normal? Are you coming out of all the COVID craziness and starting to go back to life pre-pandemic? Your call's coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
This is about something much bigger than the mask. This is really emblematic of this perverse relationship between the power elite and everyday Americans. And you see it right there. You've got Stacey Abrams sitting there in the front representing the power elite. They make the rules, but they don't follow them or feel like they have to. And then you've got these kids sitting behind her who represent us, everyday Americans, who have to follow those rules or else face the consequences. So we've got one set of rules for the power elite, a different set of rules for the rest of us, one set of rules for the people like Hillary Clinton and Stacey Abrams and Gavin Newsom and those like them, and a different set of rules for the rest of us.
That was Tulsi Gabbard on with Sean Hannity talking about if your life has changed now that we're kind of coming out of COVID and things are being freed up. 866-408-7669. Let's head to Tony listening on WIBC in my state of New Jersey. Hi, Tony.
Oh, hi, Mary. I love your show. I can't wait. I'm sorry, but you know what? Brian's a nice guy, but I can't wait for you to fill in for him.
Thank you.
Everything that you talk about is great. I got so much I'd love to talk to you about, but I'm going to pick the most important thing. My wife and I live up in Bergen County, and nothing's really changed. The shelves are really empty up here. When you go shopping, it's kind of disappointing, and it's scary to the fact that you can't buy what you want to buy. You know, all along, I've believed that government, ever since this whole thing came out, and ever since Biden became president, really, that they've been trying to take away choice. Now, choice is a very important thing. To me, it's the most important word in the dictionary, because when you get up in the morning, you make a choice. Which eye do I open first? Do I open both eyes? Do I put my foot on the ground? Which foot do I put on the ground? Do I take a shower before I have my coffee? Choice is so important, and they're trying to take choice away from us a little bit at a time. I just wanted to get your view on that.
I think you're absolutely right. Before I let you go, though, very quickly, you're in Bergen County, which had gone red for Cittadelli and then went blue. I look at that as very true blue New York expats who, you know, flee to the high taxes to New Jersey and then vote for high taxes. What are they saying about the Murphy and Biden and this whole handling of the pandemic? Do they say anything, or are they all super scared, masked up?
Everybody, you know what? People are driving down my street, one person in a car with a mask on. You know, these, I call them Bidenites. I prefer that word, Bidenites, because it seems like they would follow him. You know, if Biden told them to jump off the George Washington Bridge, they would do it. You know, but the same thing. It's like they're still wearing masks up here.
Okay.
I guess they're all afraid. But, you know, I haven't worn a mask since this whole thing started. And knock on wood, I've been okay.
Good for you. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear you're okay. Tony, thank you for that. I'm just curious. You know, you can look in certain areas. And, like, I go to the grocery store and I sometimes see, you know, like the older people wearing masks. And I have no problem with it. You do you. That's fine. I'm going to do me and we'll both be happy. You know, listen, I've had COVID, so I'm not worried. I have antibodies. I am not worried. And if I do get it again, it's going to be much less severe of a case. So I'm good. I'm not wearing a mask. I'm not going to infect you. Not going to get it from you. So for me, life has changed greatly. Chuck in Ohio in Dayton on WHIO. Chuck, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hello, Mary. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So is your life getting better now that we're coming out of COVID?
Yes, ma'am. I am an over-the-road commercial truck driver, and there's always a silver lining in any type of instance in life. With all the people mandated to stay home, my fellow truckers and I had a wonderful couple of months there, because there was no rush hour. And a truck only wants to do is maintain its speed, and we were covering a vast amount of miles because less traffic on the road.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and we had to wear masks to go in and out of the businesses. And as a professional, you learn what the policies are to get your business done and all that. Now, as far as my life being changed, you know, I'm originally from Maine but live in Ohio. Air travel has been very difficult to go visit family. And the state of Maine, I believe, wants you to quarantine for 14 days. And who in the working field can take 14 days off and then go on their vacation to, you know, I would say people typically take a 7-day vacation. So there's definitely been interfered with that and all.
Interesting. I didn't realize that Maine was doing that, because you're right. It makes no sense whatsoever to have to quarantine if you're coming back from somewhere for X number of days. And it's like, and Chuck, thank you so much. And thank you for doing what you do, being a trucker. Love to hear it. Thank you. It's like when you went to Hawaii. Did you see that? If you wanted to go to Hawaii, you had to quarantine for 2 weeks when you went to Hawaii. So you would have to fly to Hawaii, stay in your hotel room for 2 weeks, and they would not let you out of your room. So 2 weeks in your hotel room. Then you get to go on your vacation, and then you get to come back to the States. It's crazy. It's absolutely insane. Very quickly, Doug in Florida is going to end it for us here. Doug, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. About 30 seconds here, Doug. Hi.
Okay, quick one. So I'm 77 years old. I didn't believe in this crap from the get-go, and everything the government's been telling you since the get-go has pretty much been proven to be crap. Like somebody said, the average time for a conspiracy theory to become truth is about 2 weeks now, and that seems to be where it's going. I'm in a small town in central Florida. Most of the people who were there never worried about it. The big stores and all the stores had to deal with the mask mandates and all this stuff, and Bill DeSantis basically said it's crap.
But you know what, though? I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off. But in Florida, I think Florida, it's kind of not fair because Florida was an outlier pretty early on in the game, which is why so many people are moving to Florida, right? You see somebody, I love when Democrats pick up and move to Florida. It makes me laugh. But so I think you've kind of been a little bit freer than everybody else from the get-go. Stay safe if you choose not to wear your mask. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.